May it please the court, my name is Corey Quant. I'm the attorney for the appellant in this case, Mr. Andrew A. The only issue before this court, really the only issue is, did Andrew abandon his child? Did the evidence clearly and convincingly show that Andrew acted towards his child in a manner evidencing a settled purpose to be rid of all parental obligations? Did he act in a manner evidencing a settled purpose to forego all parental rights? Our position is that the evidence did not show this at trial, and the question of abandonment really comes down to intent. Did he intend to abandon his child? It's confirmed in case law time and time again that intent is the main indicator of what's going on.
Would you agree that it's a six-month look-back period, basically?
Yes, I believe that the statute specifically states that there's a six-month look-back
period. So that takes us from July of 2021 to January 23 of 2022, right?
That would be the six-month period, okay. Correct.
And was your client incarcerated that whole time?
He was not. I believe he was incarcerated until December of 2021. He wasn't incarcerated in the penitentiary. He was in and out of county jail, essentially, throughout the minor child's life. So it wasn't.
Well, there's some letters, right, that show that he was incarcerated in November of 21, and he sent a letter saying he'd be out by in January of 2022. Does that sound right?
That's correct, yes.
So looking just at that time period, other than the letters that your client wrote, what did he do to provide parental care, comfort, any of those things to his child?
Yes, I believe even in his letters and his testimony also shows he had, until he had notice of adoption proceeding, he did not know where the minor child was. He did not know how to contact the mother. I believe he testified, and the guardian ad litem report also indicated that he had written letters or attempted to write letters to the mother in two places where he thought she may be residing, but ultimately he didn't know where he was, so I don't know how he was expected to provide any of these things without having knowledge. I believe the appellee's brief also indicates that he didn't send any birthday cards, or he didn't request the child to visit him in jail, but he did not know where the child was.
During that period of time, did he file any motions in the paternity case? Did he do anything contempt or do anything to try to enforce his parenting time?
In that six-month period of time?
In that six-month period.
No, he did not file any formal motions. He, in his letters, and I believe he also testified, he believed that his letters were motions. I know it's not proper procedure, and I'm sure he knows that now, but at the time, he was doing what he could with what he had. And I would point out that while 6 months is the critical statutory time period, the Court of Appeals, Nebraska Supreme Court, have consistently said that that six-month period of time does not exist in a vacuum. The courts may consider the parent's conduct before or after the statutory period as well. And that's where the main focus of Mr. Andrew's attempts took place when he did know where the child was. He did file two complaints to modify. He did seek custody. He did seek an order to pay support. He did file a contempt action. Ultimately, that was not resolved, but I believe that the contempt action was kind of in between two of his complaints to modify.
So he filed a contempt action, but there was no hearing ever held on it, correct?
That's correct.
And then the second complaint to modify was dismissed for a lack of prosecution, correct?
I believe so, yes. He filed the contempt action as a pro se party, eventually through an attorney filed the complaint, the second complaint to modify, and I believe he did not attend that trial. I know that that's in the appellee's brief. It's a fact that can't be overlooked. I'm not sure if the record would show where he was at. I believe he was in jail at that point. That's why he did not attend that trial. But I'll leave it as to what the record shows. I'd also like to point out that in addition to to Andrew's actions, he also met resistance on behalf of the mother. Like I said, he didn't know where the minor child was. It wasn't communicated to him. He didn't know where the mother was. He couldn't reach her. She adamantly refused child support. He sought orders, and the mother stated at trial that she absolutely did not want child support. She did not want Andrew essentially coming in and claiming more rights to the child than he had, which at that point was merely supervised visitation.
It's interesting in this case that, you know, one of the arguments against your client is that he failed to provide support, but the court would not order child support because the court didn't think he could maintain a job, is I think what's stated in the record. And there's also an indication by his own last attorney that he was advising him not to try to get child support started because he wasn't being allowed to have much parenting time. So in looking at that, that concerns me a little bit from the standpoint of if one of the arguments against your client is that, hey, he's not supporting his child, well, the court wouldn't require it, she wouldn't take it, and his own attorney was advising him against trying to pay any. Is that, I mean, what's your position with regard to all that?
Yes, that essentially sums up my argument on the whole support issue, because there was never a child support order, and he was seeking a child support order throughout both modification actions.
But couldn't he have voluntarily paid support?
Yes, he could have.
But he never did he?
He never did. There's nothing in the record that he ever paid child support. That's correct.
To kind of finish where I was going with it, is it's troubling that those factors existed, but it's also troubling that your client could have voluntarily paid support without a court order.
Yes. And my position on that would be he did attempt to give gifts to the minor child who is not under the protection order, and they were refused. He did so through the attorneys of record, his own attorney, and the attorney for the mother, and they were still refused. I don't want to dive into his mind as to what he was thinking, but if he can't give gifts, if they're just being refused, how is he supposed to get anything across to the mother to support the child?
Was he getting any assistance to get some mental health treatment? Because it's pretty evident from some of the statements made by your client that there's a lot of instability there. Was anyone assisting him with some mental health care?
Not to my knowledge, no. I want to touch very briefly on the incarceration. I know that incarceration it can be an element of abandonment, because the argument being he committed the crime or did the thing that put him in there, so it was an intentional act, even though the incarceration itself is not voluntary. I wanted to draw some distinguishment from In re Michael 8, Micah H, because that case, while the party was incarcerated, they never sought any sort of parenting time or modification or custody. Andrew, in this case, he did. He consistently and numerous times filed with the court through attorneys actual motions trying to gain custody. So
from the time of your client's first arrest, which was like August of 2016, until the time of trial, he had a total of like 12 hours with his child?
That's correct, yes.
Is that a problem for you to argue that he has not abandoned him, given the limited amount of time?
Those constraints were put on him by the court.
Well, he was awarded he was awarded visitation. The first supervised visitation ended because of the way he treated staff, is my reading of the record.
Yes, that's what the record says. And if I may, real briefly, he that was one of the basis, that was the basis for the contempt that he brought, was he felt like he wasn't getting the supervised visitation that he was awarded, and that's why that was filed.
And I realize you're over time, but since you brought that up, I'm looking at his contempt affidavit. He filed that in June of 2019, okay?
Yes.
The order on modification came out the month before, right?
Yes.
And it said that he was to get first Saturday of the month visitation only.
Yes.
So his testimony that he filed it because there were two missed, that Rachel didn't bring the child to two visitations, can't really happen, can it? If the order comes out in May and June would be the one and only visitation that he gets, and then he files his contempt action?
Yes. I don't know if the record shows what his testimony was, but I think he tried to set up two separate and she didn't. That was his opinion, that he tried to set up these two on two times, and on both occasions she didn't show up. I would assume the second was set up because the first one wasn't followed through with. But I don't know, without reading through the record again, the exact answer to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Allie, how long did we take the appellant over?
1 minute, 37 seconds, Your Honor.
Do you add that to the appellee's time? So there's a trend going here.
Thank you. May it please the court, Judge Reedman, Judge Bishop, Judge Arterburn. I'm Susan Sapp, and I'm here representing the appellees. The abandonment decision by Judge Long conforms to the law. It's supported by competent evidence. It's not arbitrary, it's not capricious, and it's not unreasonable. And Judge Long expressly found Andrew A.'s testimony not credible. You're right, it's a six-month look back. But Andrew A. abandoned this child long before the six-month look-back period. Abandonment is evidenced by behavior, not talk. It shows a disregard for parental obligations. It shows abandonment of parental responsibilities. And it's an issue of intent that is typically shown by circumstantial evidence of behavior. Andrew has made a number of choices. He's chosen criminal activity over this child. He has been arrested close to 40 times. He's in jail as we sit here today. He's chosen to prioritize violence over the needs of Antaeus' mother and his own mother, toward whom he was violent. He's put violence over the needs of his child. He's chosen to behave very poorly at supervised visitations, making continuing the visits impossible. This was the case with four visits in 2018. At one point, he claimed he was interested in starting to act like a parent, so he hired a lawyer and he sought rights, and he did nothing to exercise that visitation. Again, a lot of talk, no action.
So if this were a termination case, I don't think we would have any problem on the record to find unfitness. But we're not looking at unfitness. We're simply looking at abandonment, which talks about intent. And when you got a guy who offers to make gifts, stuffed animals, gift card, whatever that gift was supposed to be, and the mother rejects it and then testifies at trial, I didn't want child support. I wasn't going to accept it. If he made those offers to you today, would you take them or would you reject them? You bet, I think was her response. So how's a dad supposed to get those things to his children if the mom is adamant about not accepting them?
He knew how to hire a lawyer. He knew how to file a motion to modify. He knew how to set up visitation. He knew to check with the court about where Antaeus lived. Antaeus was living with my clients from 2020. That was recorded with the court. He had every avenue to find a way to communicate with this child, to get support to this child, and to have visits with this child. And he never followed through because it was all talk, not behavior. Abandonment comes from not doing the things that a parent does. Parenting is an action verb. It requires action. And Andrew saw this child 12 hours in his entire life because of Andrew's choices.
He sought to exercise two visits in 2020, none in 2021. And he admits he never even asked Rachel where his son was. We hear that, oh, he didn't know where Antaeus was. He didn't know because he testified in the Bill of Exceptions, page 151, line 17, he didn't ask her. He had communication with Rachel. He had access to a lawyer. He could have found out where this child was had he cared. He was a prolific letter writer, as we know, in his jailhouse correspondence in 2019 and late 2021, after he knew there had been an adoption-related filing in the district court. He doesn't ask about Antaeus. He doesn't ask where Antaeus is. He doesn't ask the court to do anything. He just complains. He rambles, but takes no action. Doesn't ask for any action. These tepid expressions of intent, expressions of interest perhaps in the child, end up being empty promises and empty words. They manifest no parental relationship. And nothing that he wrote to the judge, or no actions that he said he wanted to take or claimed that he took or filed, ever inured to the benefit of this child. That's parenting. Parenting is, as this court has said in Eva S., it is a continuing interest and a genuine effort to maintain communication and association. You said it's not an ambulatory thing that can be dissipated with token efforts, empty words, expressions of interest without action. As our court said in In Re Sunshine, you don't get to phone it in.
You know, the interesting thing to kind of pick up a little bit on what Judge Reedman raised as kind of the parallel, a different track of termination of parental rights versus this. In a termination of parental rights action, this dad would have been provided services to at least try to see if his mental health issues could have been brought under some control. And I think the record is just replete with red flags of some mental health issues going on here, but it doesn't seem he was given any assistance or sought any for himself. Should that be a concern for us? I mean, if in a parental termination track, he would have had services, he may not have succeeded. He may have still been found unfit to parent, but he's never been given that chance. Is that not something for us to consider in our review on this abandonment issue?
There's no evidence in the record that he ever accepted the fact or the notion that he had mental health issues, that he never sought services, that he never took any responsibility for his behavior ever. Not in the supervised visitation, not in his ramblings to the court. He blames the court. He says that Rachel somehow caused him to assault his own mother, that the court had conspired against him, that all the lawyers had. Not once is there ever a smidgen of responsibility.
Sometimes people with mental health issues have trouble acknowledging that, right?
But they have to ask for help, and they have to be willing to accept that there's a problem. And if you can't parent your child for the entirety of the child's life, it is incumbent upon you to seek assistance and seek services yourself to be in a position to parent, not to just complain about what's going on.
Well, he claims he paid, you know, close to $7,000 for past attorneys to try to help him get on track, but I don't know. I mean, it's a troubling issue when you can see that there's a lot of mental health issues apparent in this record.
Judge, he had the awareness and wherewithal to buy a souped-up Land Rover for $8,400 from London. He had the resources and the wherewithal to do what he wanted to do. None of that ever had to do with Antaeus. If he'd put that much effort into getting healthy or getting well or paying lawyers or following through on what he had requested in court, he could have had an opportunity to parent. But he put himself routinely in a position of not being available to parent. He's been arrested nearly 40 times, 3 felony convictions. He has spent almost the entirety of Antaeus's life dealing with criminal prosecutions or being incarcerated. Those are choices. This court has made it clear that incarceration may be involuntary, but the behavior and the choices that lead to the conduct that cause incarceration are entirely voluntary. And he has chosen that life over being a parent to Antaeus, and he's chosen it over and over.
Yes. Is there any evidence at all of him attempting to perform a parental function?
No, sir. Not if we have a shared understanding of parenting, caring for, living with, taking care of, dressing, cleaning up when they're sick, feeding them, taking them to school, reading to them, hugging them, following up with their teachers, making sure they're safe, making sure they have a roof over their head. No, 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 and no.
Is there anything in the record regarding how the supervised visits went? Is there any report in the record?
My understanding from the record is that he was aggressive and inappropriate in his interactions, not just with staff, but with Antaeus, and to the point where the supervised visitation had to stop. And people weren't willing to supervise it any further. Seeing a child 12 hours in their lifetime is not parenting. Abandonment is when you withhold or make yourself unavailable to provide your child with care, love, protection, maintenance, and the opportunity for the display of parental affection. A small offered gift of unknown type in 2018 is a token effort that this court has rejected in other similar cases, Micah H. and Eva S.
Does it trouble you at all that in November of 2020, his own lawyer sent him a letter advising him not to be in a hurry to pay child support?
I think that attorney is free to give the legal advice that he or she wants to give. Also, so too, Andrew has the option to choose to pay. Real parents don't wait to be ordered to take care of and support their children. They do it whether there's a court order saying they need to or not.
Does it matter? Does it matter that Rachel wasn't going to accept it? She refused it in 2018. She testified at the time of trial. She didn't want him to pay child support because she thought that would make him feel entitled to see his son.
I understand that testimony, but we have no way to know what she would have done had it actually happened. That was her testimony, but he never tried.
He did try. He tried in 2018 and it got rebuffed.
With a few random presents and gift cards, yes. There was never any effort after that, Judge Reedman. And we would have to speculate as to whether or not it would be successful or not. But he didn't reach out to other people. He had access to grandparents. He had access to lawyers. He had access to the court file. He had access to get support to this child if he had wanted to. His answer at trial was he didn't pay support because nobody ordered him to.
And there was a long period of time where Rachel didn't update her information, correct?
There was a period of time largely covering the time period where there were two protection orders against him that she was not willing to give him information about her whereabouts. That was during a time that he had a lawyer. That was during a time that the lawyer was communicating with Rachel. And then in 2020, she gave my client's address to the court, and it was available thereafter. He didn't make any effort, according to the record, to access information about Antaeus' whereabouts. And he admitted he didn't ask Rachel.
He did contact your client once.
Well, I think they had more opportunities than that. And I think that he had ongoing communication with Rachel as well. In terms of the letters, I just want to point out that the communication did not ask for relief, and they were after the adoption proceedings had started under 43-104 in its subsections. It was under the old statute 43-104.25 that they went to the district court for consent. That's when he started to complain, but again, took no action and asked for nothing from the court. With that, Your Honor, unless you have more questions, I would ask that the court uphold the finding of abandonment from the lower court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted and counsel is excused. Mm-hmm.